This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast, which can be found at thehollywoodoutsider.com. We have a new episode every Thursday. This is episode 169, and this week we are discussing upcoming releases including The Hobbit 3, Annie, and Night at the Museum, Secret of the Tomb. We're going to discuss the new Terminator Genesis trailer, spoiler-free reviews of The Theory of Everything, and Begin Again. Our From the Outside In topic this week, what makes a movie trilogy, and what our favorites are. Stick around after our normal show this week because we're going to discuss that Sons of Anarchy series finale, and we're going to try and get all this stuff in within 2 hours. Latest in movie and TV news, including our own trivia segments. My name is Aaron Peterson, and I could belt out The Sun Will Come Out Tomorrow at any second, so don't push me, Scott. Joining me today are my fellow hosts, our resident video game physicist, Scotty Clark.
Physicist? Ooh, I've been upgraded, huh?
Yeah. Well, I think by this point you are a scientist.
A video game scientist.
You are. Wow. We have our own bitchy hobbit, Justin McCumber.
What's up?
And finally, he ensures that random pauses and Ray-Bans will always be fashionable, Brian Williams.
Yeah, can't argue with that.
Well played, sir. Well played. What is going on? What is new with everybody? Are you ready for the year to end?
I'm ready for Christmas break.
Yeah, you're a teacher, so you get like eight weeks
Yeah,
off?
Okay. Normal people do not get a Christmas break, so.
Do you notice how he says it like he's in school, not that he teaches school? I get a Christmas break. Yay, I don't have to be at the bus stop. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
What about everybody else? Justin, you're getting ready to go on like a cruise or something, right?
Yeah, over the Christmas holiday, my wife and I are taking a Caribbean cruise. So, yeah, we're having to go cruise around the Caribbean for a week. It's what we got to do.
Got to go on a cruise.
I'm sorry, man. That sounds horrible. Just horrible.
My birthday is Saturday. So, again, gifts.
What cruise line are you going on?
We're going with Carnival. We've gone Carnival several times.
Do we give a shit?
But we're thinking about changing it up to something that maybe is a little nicer next time. We don't know which way to go. If anyone has suggestions, look, please let me know.
Yes. Royal Caribbean. Oasis of the Seas. Just do it.
Do you get a commission?
Just go ahead. I wish, because I've been pimping it like crazy ever since I don't care. That was the cruise I went on earlier this year, and I don't care if the ship just left the dock, went about 200 miles offshore, and just did circles for a full week, and then come back in.
This episode just was brought to you by Royal Caribbean Cruise Lines, sponsored by Brian Williams.
Book your weekend today.
Yeah. Hey, just call me. I'll get you set up.
Use the coupon code Brian.
Use his HBO Go code. Did you guys see that Paramount launched a Best Picture campaign for Transformers Age of Extinction? It's fantastic. Everybody should go find this because it should happen. I would love to see a Transformers movie in Best Picture.
For the Oscars?
Yeah. Not for like Bob's movie awards. It's like for the real deal. They actually launched an Oscar campaign.
You don't think if they actually won, that would just pretty much ruin any legitimacy the Oscars might have?
No, I don't worry about that at all. And I think Michael Bay would accept it with a big explosion, like on stage.
There would just the Oscars explodes.
Yeah.
The screen behind him would just have to be nothing but explosions.
It would be fantastic.
I agree.
And scantily clad women.
Oh,
maybe
yeah.
They could be exploding.
That seems a little dramatic, but I like it. I like where your mind's at. Let's shake this up. Everybody says let's jazz the Oscars up and make it hipper. You make Michael Bay win or even get nominated. That's hipper.
Yeah.
Is that the word? More hip.
But that's not the one I want to be. I mean, I know Brian and you. Brian loved it a lot and that kind of stuff, but
I don't know if he loved it Oscar-like.
That's kind of what I was thinking or hoping.
Brian, do you think Transformers was Oscar-worthy? You can tell the truth.
Oh, God, no. I mean, unless you go with the special effects category, that's
sound
the only Oscar.
That kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, that's about the only thing that is Oscar-worthy.
But. Well, what about Optimus Prime's plight? I mean, it seemed like he had a really deep art. And Mark Wahlberg, the eyebrows, man, they were very deep.
Hey, look, and the character depth about, you know, being a father and adjusting to his almost grown daughter. Mm-hmm. And
incredibly hot,
carnal,
grown daughter.
Carnal urges. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, hey, I give him kudos for his ability in that. But I just think that there's probably more deserving roles out there that probably need to be in the Oscar race.
Then he'd be recognized than Mark Wahlberg and his hot daughter.
Yeah.
Do you think that's, though, because we look at the Oscars as only for, quote, Oscar bait movies? We don't put in, like, hard...
I think Paramount just said, fuck you, Oscars, and I'm just going to make a camp... You know, we're tired of getting... We're just tired of getting comments about how you can't have movies like this, and they're never critically accepted. So I really think Paramount's just having fun. Or Michael Bay convinced them because they need him to make money for them.
That seems
so
like
he's
really,
like, do it or I quit.
That seems like a really expensive way to just have some fun.
Egos are very expensive, Scott.
Apparently.
We have to send Justin money every week. It's ridiculous. I mean, it's like a quarter. But...
He gets money?
Mm-hmm. It's the worst 50 cents I spend every week.
But you want quality goods.
That's right.
You got to pay for it.
Holy Trailer Week. There were, and I know we're going to talk about the Terminator Genesis trailer, but I want to point out some of the trailers that actually came out this week. Pixar's new movie, Inside Out, San Andreas, where The Rock most likely boots
San Andreas.
Yeah, whatever. You know, San Andreas.
However you want to pronounce it.
Whatever. The one where The Rock beats the shit out of an earthquake. That one. There's the new Mad Max Fury Road trailer, which obviously looks awesome, and the new Robert Zemeckis movie, The Walk, which is, I think, based on that Man on a Wire documentary. Mm-hmm. And they're all on the website. So what do you guys think? Did any of these, like, blow you away?
Yeah,
that
I think...
Fury Road is awesome.
Yeah, I think that's my most anticipated right now. Just,
really?
Yeah, it looks just... That's a go-to-the-theater, just sit back, and just have fun. I feel like I haven't done that since... Like Pacific Rim or something like that. Just
here's my thing with that one is that I think it looks good. I do. I think it looks really good.
Mm-hmm.
But people are acting like it's never been done before. I'm like, you need to go rewatch the Mad Max movies because most of this has been done. It just has better effects now.
Well, I think there's a level of some of those the vehicle carnage that whether it's real or CG generated, I don't know. But some of it looks like I don't know how the fuck they pulled that off. Unlike anything I've ever seen before.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of it, but some of it. Sorry, Brian. Go.
No, it's fine. It's, you know, Aaron, earlier today on Facebook, you actually asked a question. You said, Mel, who?
Mm-hmm.
And those two words actually really sum up that trailer because you watch that and you're sucked into that, you know, what's going on to where you're not even considering you're not comparing the two. You know, you're not comparing this one to the past three Mel Gibson ones.
Mm-hmm.
You're just like sucked into this as, you know, as its own movie, as its standalone Mad Max story.
Absolutely. And I think some people took that as I meant Tom Hardy is going to be better than Mel Gibson. They didn't really show enough of Tom Hardy for me to make that assumption. All I was saying was this looks like it's its own thing, even though it's very reminiscent of a lot of the stuff they did in the first movies. It's its own thing.
It's not like the Terminator Genesis trailer, which we'll talk about later, that it really seems to kind of rehash a lot of the stuff that made, you know, the first few movies popular.
I can't wait till we get to that trailer because just the time travel alone is probably going to start a fight.
I think the trailer itself caused a paradox.
It did. That's true. Remember when you shop for your Christmas stuff, use the Amazon link on the website. That's at thehollywoodoutsider.com. And don't forget Scotty's charity. What's that?
I was going to say, make sure you search Justin R. McCumber. My books are there.
That's true. Out on his birthday. He apparently...
Hey, you know, a Minor Magic's a 99 cents. A Broken Magic will be out this weekend. Come on. There's quality. A lot of quality.
And right before Justin stomped all over Scott's moment... Scotty's charity.
I saw a pimping moment. I had to take it. I saw him a shot.
Scott is contributing to a charity called Child's Play. Real quick, can you explain what that is real quick?
Yeah, Child's Play is a charity that basically offers toys and video games to kids that are stuck in the hospital over the holidays. It's my favorite charity. I donate every year, and I've kind of organized a campaign to get more money to the charity. I've got Aaron's going to put the link in the show notes. It's already there.
It's like magic.
If you could, if you're in the giving mood, with it being the holidays, that kind of thing, please consider giving. It's an awesome charity, and I'm actually matching dollar for dollar personally every dollar that gets donated through this link. You do have to go through this link to get the extra donation from me, though. So as of this recording, we're about just shy of $300. So
nice.
It's going pretty well.
And Brian and I both agreed that we would watch you match that money. So
watch me match that money.
Yeah, because we're not going to match it. That's so expensive.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, charity. Yeah. Buy my books.
Yep. Charity. We don't have time for that.
Kids and charity.
Buy my books. Is that what you said?
That's right.
If you really want to make those kids' day, buy those kids a minor magic.
Exactly.
Buy a broken magic.
Contribute to Scott's charity and buy Justin's book and send it to them so they can read and play games.
Justin's going to go on those kids' wish list and put his own book on them.
Go to the Amazon link, buy Justin's book, and send it to these troubled kids.
Exactly. All right, movie news. Sony Studios got hacked over the movie The Interview. We mentioned that briefly, but the reason we're coming back to it, we mentioned it briefly a week or two ago, whenever it was, movies have been leaked. Careers are now being destroyed. I mean, there's producers that had private emails slamming Angelina Jolie. There's talk about the Spider-Man movie that they were trying to work out with Marvel and get Spider-Man into the Avengers. Like, all this stuff. But we keep reading it. So are we part of the problem, Justin, or what?
Apparently, this hack was done by an organization calling themselves the Guardians of Peace, or, you know, GOP. And apparently the things that were done, the images, hey, that's what it says. Hackers call themselves Guardians of Peace or GOP.
You are so excited to say that, weren't you?
Well, all GOPs are nasty and should be avoided. But apparently they had already hacked, like last year, some South Korean banks. But apparently what happened is that a few days before the hack was finished, they warned Sony that if you don't pull the upcoming movie, The Interview, which is
Seth Rogen, James Franco going after,
would you let me talk?
Well, you got to talk faster. You're just so slow.
I've never been accused of not talking enough. Going to North Korea and killing Kim Jong-un. This Guardians of Peace organization is a North Korean hacker group, and they're quite pissed that this movie's coming out. They warned Sony, if you don't pull it, we're going to do it. Sony, of course, has not pulled their movie, and so this hack was put in place. Apparently, this had been building for months, where they were inserting this little bit of malware across different Sony computers to the point that it ultimately culminated in the big hack. That, yeah, it released all sorts of emails and documents. But, you know, you asked, are we to blame for that? Even if we didn't read a word of it, Guardians of Peace still would have done the hack. I don't think us consuming then what came out of that is encouragement or some kind of, you know, making us like we're aiding and abetting what they're doing.
Do you think we should be talking about it, though? Like, we should be able... You know, because a lot of news sites, obviously they were sent all this information, you know, all the major news sites. And Hollywood Reporter, Variety, all of them have been running stories about the information they're finding and all these private emails and whatnot. Do you think, like, we as a society should say, hey, this was done illegally. We should not touch this. We should be the better people, so to speak.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. If we were all... The kind of people we think we are or like to act like we are from time to time, we would not be reading these articles. We would not give these hackers the time of day. But that ain't
shit
who we
mannequins.
Are. That's not who we are. We are rubberneckers. We love seeing this kind of shit. And so let's just admit that as a people, this is right up our alley. This is exactly what we love. Seeing rich, powerful, entitled people for who they really are and then getting a good laugh over it. Because if you read some of these comments...
Oh, they're so good.
It's fucking incredible what these people are willing to commit to digital eternity as far as these emails go. I mean, you know, when the internet first started getting big and people were emailing, one of the things I always remembered... is don't put something in an email or a text or whatever that you wouldn't want your mama seeing. Well, of course, I've said plenty of things that I would probably prefer my mom not see. But the level of things these people are saying about each other and to each other.
In company email. It's fantastic.
They're practically threatening each other's jobs, livelihoods, because of perceived slights, because they didn't like the way somebody acted.
Well, I didn't read any of the emails or anything. I saw the headlines, basically, but I didn't. I honestly just don't. I personally don't care a whole lot about what's going on with the execs and that kind of thing. It's like you, like Justin said, you don't say stuff in email or whatever that you don't want out there, especially on a company email. Like that's like
the thing I find fantastic about it is I don't like I hate gossip stuff. I always have. It's just one of those things. I just don't care. But this is one of those. This has been some of the more interesting gossipy things I guess I've ever heard of. Because it's real. You know, you get so much of the fluff and everything else about producers saying how this personality is fantastic. Oh, they're amazing to work with. I love them. I love them. I love them. That's all you ever hear. It's like now we get to see some honesty. We get to see some truth behind the scenes. And, you know, hearing, I think it was Scott Rudin, and he was talking about Angelina Jolie. I think, I don't quote me that that's who it was. But, yeah, Scott Rudin was basically bashing one of their biggest stars, and because he thought it was private. And the fact that that's how they really think, I wish actors and producers and directors would be more honest like that all the time. I think we would respect them a lot more.
You think it'd mix up the whole industry?
You can say that the same thing about everybody. Mm-hmm. Everybody in this world puts on one front for a certain group, but then puts on another for a different, and then lets it down for a third. This is really nothing more than the fappening, except instead of tits and sex videos, we're finding out what people really think of somebody else, or industrial espionage type stuff about backroom dealings that were trying to happen or whatever. And I'm kind of in the boat with Scott where I really don't care. But I do agree with you guys that it is interesting in the aspect of, okay, producer A thinks that actor B is a piece of shit or really great or whatever the case is. I do agree with the aspect that it is really neat to see the honesty part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I just... It's just not really something that I feel like I've got to invest a lot of time in reading and following. Hollywood people are just notorious, not just producers and executives, but actors, actresses, you know, the whole gambit is they're notorious for being not just two-faced, but like multi-faced. So I just assume that this, you know, this studio executive doesn't care for this actor.
Do you think that they should move, like Sony should cancel the movie? Because it seems like it's costing them millions of dollars. Do you think they should actually say, okay, we like you, Rogan and Franco, but your little movie where you pretend kill Kim Jong-un, which I'm sure they probably don't even do it.
Which, well, at this point, the damage is done, right?
But do you still release it, or do you just say, you know what, we're going to get away from this entire thing? We're walking away.
No, you've come this far. You've got to release it. And let's say you're losing money. Get back whatever on earth you possibly can. And you don't know. You may have a cult underground hit that makes you way more than you ever thought, whether it's at the front end or the back end once it hits video and video on demand.
This is going to do nothing but bolsters to sales. I mean, it's just everyone wants to see it now, just to see what the hullabaloo is.
I really don't know if this is one of those things that drives people to watch a movie they wouldn't normally watch.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's that in your face, like Kim Kardashian's naked body the last few weeks.
Oh, but, when she broke the internet.
Yeah.
God bless her.
But
when
you know,
she back
but,
up into the camera,
had that somehow been connected with the interview? It's a no-brainer. This would have been a higher grossing than anything else this year. But
Justin, what's the Spider-Man thing you started to say?
Well, let me just say that I think another reason you don't pull the film, you know, it may be a meme cliche, but you don't let the fucking terrorists win. You don't let these fucking people bully you into doing, you know, bending to their will out of fear. Fuck them.
Hey. That's a Fox News cliche, not a meme cliche.
You know. As far as Spider-Man went, there was talk of Spider-Man appearing in Captain America 3. and being part of the Civil War event that'll be coming up in Phase 3. I don't know if that's now kaput, but I do think it's interesting that we've all talked about how much we would love to see Spider-Man or, you know, the X-Men or Fantastic Four appearing in one of these Marvel films. That we've talked about it, but apparently so have producers and big muckety-mucks at Sony and Marvel. So there are these things that are being talked about. They may happen, they may not, but at least they're open to talking about that idea, which I think is really great. But, you know, folks, emails are not private, ever. Never, ever.
That's true.
Now, if you type it on the internet, just assume that it will be there forever, and at some point someone may decide they want to take a look at it and let other people know. So keep that in your mind before you hit that send button.
And by the way, neither is Snapchat. No matter what, right. How that app works.
People are dumb with that. People
it
are
doesn't
dumb.
Really disappear after 10 seconds. Mm.
I love people. They're so gullible and adorable. Speaking of Marvel, they apparently like to do everything at once. This past week, they announced confirmations finally. We've been avoiding talking about it because we didn't want to speculate because they basically have mentioned every single person for Doctor Strange. Benedict Cumberbatch is confirmed. He is going to be Doctor Strange. I think a lot of people are excited. Ryan Reynolds, 100% confirmed. He's playing Deadpool, which for me personally is fantastic. They start filming in March. Kristen Ritter is going to be Jessica Jones. That's one of the Netflix shows. What do any of these make you go, ooh, ah, Brian?
Well, look, I mean, my affinity for Benedict Cumberbatch just is pretty well documented in this at this stage. Mm-hmm. I mean,
you don't need to hack that to find out.
That's right.
No. So I'm excited about that. I think physically, he really kind of brings that presence, that kind of mysterious presence, that tall, lean figure that Doctor Strange just kind of seems to glide through a room or whatever with. I don't know. I think he kind of brings that same, I don't know. I just think he kind of fits Doctor Strange more than like a Joaquin Phoenix or something.
He is the best everything. Whatever the role is, you're like, you know what? Benedict Cumberbatch would be a great Tootie in Facts of Life.
Enough to realize that I've got to rein in my love for the Cumberbatch. I do.
You do.
That being said, I still think, I don't know if he's the perfect guy. I think he is the... I'll just say I'm pleased with the decision. How's that? Ryan Reynolds is Deadpool. I mean,
that's perfect.
I think just about anybody pretty much agrees that he's just he is Deadpool.
McCumber, you were really excited, not because you have some unhealthy obsession with Cumberbatch like B, but because you actually are happy that an actor of this caliber got the role.
Yeah, I mean, Marvel's done a fantastic job of bringing in some A-list talent to make their films as good as they can be. And to get someone like Benedict Cumberbatch, who is this massive rising star, to add his gravity, his weight, his presence to Marvel just really excites me because there could be that future film where Doctor Strange gets to play against, you know, science and magic, bring Tony Stark into it or any of the other characters. But to have him now be part of what they're building, to me, says they want the best talent they can possibly get to play these roles. And I because he's doing it, I think you'll continue to see high caliber actors and actresses wanting to be a part of these films. They're no longer those films that you do when you're on your downside of your career.
Look at who this guy has played now. He's played Khan. He's played Smaug. He's going to play Doctor Strange, Sherlock. Sure. I mean, he's like a geek wet dream at this point. There's no franchise he hasn't touched. And you know he's going to show up in Star Wars somewhere.
Oh, he has to.
He'll be an Ewok, whatever. He'll be in there somewhere.
Ewok would be a pretty tall Ewok.
He'll be the tallest Ewok you've ever seen, Scott.
I think that's a Wookiee.
Whatever. Touche. Is that what an Ewok is? Is it a midget Wookiee?
No.
They're baby Wookiees.
No, they're not.
Are you sure?
Ewoks are on from the planet Endor. Wookiees are from Kashyyyk.
Chewbacca was on Endor.
Are they cast-offs, maybe? Like, hey, you guys aren't tall enough for this planet. Go here. Manor force field for a half-built station.
No.
All right.
Scotty.
Yes.
Endor was a moon, not a planet.
You're right.
It's smaller than a planet. It's like a geek-off. Therefore, you put smaller Wookiees on moons.
That's right.
Because they can't fit on a moon.
His logic makes sense when you think about it. They can't.
They would
fit.
Be crushed on a regular planet.
Proportionate Wookiees.
They do look the same. Like it's pretty much.
No, they don't.
They pretty much.
Ewoks
look the
are little bears.
It's like they haven't matured. They haven't gone through puberty.
Well, what does a Wookiee look like?
A Sasquatch.
Yes.
Like an Ewok, a small Sasquatch.
Mm-hmm. Well, like Daryl from The Walking Dead by the fifth season.
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah, that's true. I want to point out, I am so excited about Ryan Reynolds, even though I know his star has faded in a lot of ways. For me, he still is the perfect guy to play Deadpool.
Now, is that going to be masked all
the
time?
It has to be. He doesn't look like Ryan Reynolds in the comics. I mean, he's a deformed and...
Well, I'm sure he'll pull up the bottom of it to like eat something and make a joke or drink something, but he'll probably wear the mask the whole time.
I would imagine, yeah. It's a cool mask.
Because isn't he all, like, fucked up?
Yeah. He's disgusting. He just not... Like, Ryan Reynolds is a fairly handsome man. And, you know, I say fairly handsome. He's...
You don't fuck up that moneymaker.
No.
So now is there any...
He's no Brian Williams, but...
Hey. Who is?
Not many people.
I know. He does great on that NBC News show.
He does.
Brian Williams.
Yeah.
No,
that was a reach. We heard. We got you.
Is there any backstory to Deadpool? Like, are we ever going to see his face? Like, how he became Deadpool, or is Deadpool one of those characters that's always been that way?
No, there's a backstory. So I'm sure they'll not. It's not deep. It's not like a Peter Parker backstory, but there's a backstory.
So you think we'll see Ryan Reynolds unmasked at the beginning of that? You think it'll be all just Deadpool?
I think it'll be all Deadpool.
Okay.
Now Jessica Jones, Kristen Ritter is going to be her, and that's one of those Netflix shows. And there's what, four of them, right? There's Daredevil. There's Jessica Jones, there's Luke Cage, and Iron Fist. That's the other one. Okay. Well, we'll see how that pans out. That sounds interesting. I like Kristen Ritter. I just don't know that character. I think she's like a detective or something. But, yeah, that's about all I know. All right. Bond. James Bond. They finally, about like 3 minutes after we finished our show last week, they announced everything about James Bond, so we couldn't talk about it. But we're not skipping it, because it's James fucking Bond. The 24th film... in the franchise, if you don't count that shitty Woody Allen movie that has nothing to do with the series. Scott, what did you think about this cast? You got Christoph Waltz, Andrew Scott, Monica Bellucci.
Why has she not been in a Bond movie until now?
I don't know, but she's still gorgeous. She's like 80 at this point. She's still...
She's over 50 years old.
And she's still astonishing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, just, she hurts. She's so beautiful.
Yeah. But she just looks like the epitome of a Bond girl. Does she not? I mean,
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean,
Oh, yeah.
But we're all, like you said, we're also getting Christoph Waltz. We're getting, how do you pronounce it? Is it Léa Seydoux?
Yep,
she was in that Blue is the Warmest Color. You saw that, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. She's good. She's a good actress.
Yeah. And then Dave.
And Monica Bellucci again? I'm just saying.
And Monica Bellucci. And David Bautista, the guy from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah. And
Drax the Destroyer.
Rafe Fiennes. Rafe, the guy who can't spell and pronounce his name correctly.
Well, he was in the last one.
How hot is Monica Bellucci? I'm just saying.
Amazing.
She's in this?
Amazing. She is.
I know. We kind of glossed over it earlier, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, and if you don't know who Monica Bellucci is, look on the internet and then just mark some time. Take some time. Enjoy.
Watch Matrix Reloaded and Revolutions.
Fuck Matrix Reloaded. Watch everything that she's been in, because she's barely clothed in most of it, and she's actually a good actress too. I'm sorry, Scott. I keep stepping all over your words.
No, it's okay.
But it's Monica Bellucci.
I thought you said Belushi.
I like saying it every way possible. It doesn't. You shut up, Brian. It doesn't matter how you say it. She's still gorgeous. I'm sorry.
She was great in Animal House.
What?
You said Belushi.
Whatever. What's it about?
Well,
it doesn't matter. It's a Bond movie. But
it sounds pretty much like your typical Bond movie. A cryptic message from Bond's past sends him on a trail to uncover a sinister organization. While M battles political forces to keep the Secret Service alive, Bond peels back the layers of deceit to reveal the terrible truth behind Spectre. That sounds like a Bond movie.
Well, Spectre is huge in the Bond book, so I'm glad that they're finally getting to that. And I think, isn't that kind of what Quantum was? Was Quantum like Solace? Spectre in waiting?
Yeah, it was kind of like an early version.
Yeah.
You know, the beta.
And Daniel Craig is back in case somebody was.
And I'm Ben sure Whishaw. Ben Whishaw's back too.
Who?
The guy that played Q.
Oh, okay.
He's also in those Lexus commercials now, I think.
But I don't watch those because I can't afford them.
I don't watch commercials anymore.
I don't
own media and I don't watch commercials.
What's his name?
Ben, I don't know if it's Whishaw or Whishaw.
Do you know?
He was also on Cloud Atlas.
Yes. Oh, of course. So everything refers, Scott can refer to video games for everything. Justin can refer to Wachowski movies for everything.
That's right.
All roads lead to Wachowski.
That's fantastic. Okay, I do want to say we've had several topic ideas, great ones actually, the last few weeks from listeners. I wanted to let you guys know that I have submitted those, like Sean St. Clair, Steve Peterson, Legal Logan, and a few others I'm sure I missed. We will get to all of them. We've had several already lined up, but we've already got shows planned for next year, so we will be using them, I promise. And also, for our best of show, the last show of the year, We're hoping to use mostly listener picks. So if you email us by December 20th, your favorite topic or moment of the whole this year, preferably with episode numbers, because I'm lazy and old.
Let's just face it. That's a shit ton of hours to be sorting through. When was that time that we talked about that? And
Be specific if you can. It would be fantastic. And we're going to put the best ones into a best of episode for the end of the year. Subject line on the email, best of ho 2014, feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com.
And Aaron will send you all free shirts.
Not everybody that downloads.
Free shirts for everybody.
You get a shirt. And you get a shirt. You get a shirt.
And Justin's a lying son of a bitch.
All paid for by Aaron himself.
Welcome to Brian's Trailer Park.
All right, well, the beginning of Terminator Genesis is set in 2029 when the future war is raging and a group of human rebels has the artificial evil intelligence system called Skynet on the ropes. John Connor is the leader of the resistance, and Kyle Reese is his loyal soldier who was raised in the ruins of a post-apocalyptic California. As in the original film, Connor sends Reese back to 1984 to save Connor's mother, Sarah, who's played by Amelia Clarke, from a Terminator program to kill her so that she won't ever give birth to John. But what Reese finds on the other side is nothing like he expected. So, Justin, let's start with you. Tell me your thoughts on this trailer.
I am so stoked on what they're doing with this, because I went into it figuring they were doing basically just a reboot to, you know, refresh it so they can continue to churn out new Terminator films. But when you get to the point where the big twist occurs, you know, and you realize that, wait, this isn't a reboot. This is a complete almost reimagining, but even not that. It's like a reboot meets a sequel.
It's a reboot
meets a prequel. It is strange and odd, but it is, I think it is really, really cool. I cannot wait. This went from a meh to I cannot wait to see this.
Really? Did you get confused in the timeline? Because by the end of the trailer, I had to watch it three more times and go, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
Well, see, that's the whole thing with time travel type stories. Time travel doesn't exist, so you can almost do anything you want to with it as long as you're not setting up rules and then breaking those rules. So, you know, within this franchise, this reboot, instead of Arnie appearing, you know, minutes before Kyle Reese did, it looks like he appeared 20 or 30 years into the past, and he spent all that time, I guess, becoming her bodyguard for some reason.
Yeah, apparently she was orphaned at around 9 years old and raised by the Terminator.
So yeah, you're getting this whole older Terminator, which I can understand how you might get an old looking cyborg. I can make that work in my head, but they're introducing the T-1000s, earlier into the timeline than they did before. I love it. I love that they're not playing it safe, that they're going in a completely different direction with it. And it's to me, it's added a lot of new life into a franchise that I really felt like should just be done. And now I'm excited again.
I'm kind of halfway between these both of your guys' ideas, because I'm just as confused as Aaron is.
I was confused the first time. I got it by the fourth.
Okay. So I'm still a lot more confused than you. But
thank God.
I don't know. If it doesn't – I understand what you're saying, where if it's in a time travel, you make the rules, as long as you don't break them, it's fine. But if I'm so distracted by trying to wrap my head around what's happening, I feel like it's going to – I'm going to be too focused on that instead of the rest of the movie and the things that I actually want would go into this movie to see, which is the awesome action and the...
If it doesn't fit, you must acquit, essentially.
Sure.
Oh. I think that's why you need to go into the movie the first time you see it.
I tried.
Not trying to work it out ahead of time. Let the movie explain what it's going to explain to
you. Am I the only one here that thinks that this looks like a mashup between... T1 and T2?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
No, you're not the only one.
You're not the only one.
Okay. Because that's what it looks like. It looks like they take kind of the best parts of both movies, cram it into one, and say, okay, here's where we're starting from the angle of what's going on in the future versus the angle of, oh my God, there's this giant robot from the future that's apparently chasing me. Why? You know, you try to figure out, you know, from...
The why, yeah.
Yeah, from Sarah Connor's angle, as opposed to this is more coming from Reese and John Connor's angle.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't, as far as the confusion part, I don't know.
I did the first few times.
The trailer is to have you curious enough to wonder, oh, I've got to go see this. But to me, this just, I'm probably on the opposite end of the spectrum than Justin is, because it, And to see Arnold going, I'll be back. I pray to God this is the last time I ever hear him mutter those words.
It was also the first time we ever heard him was in the original Terminator. And
yeah,
for me,
that
gives it, all right, I'm okay with him saying it again, because it's kind of referring back to the first film.
I get that, but he does it in every movie.
Do we need a nod to that movie, though? He does it in like anything he does.
He does. He does like a Christmas special. I'll be back.
Jingle All the Way. I mean,
everything, Scott.
There's a reference to that. And if had he never touched that reference at all through this whole time, I would probably, you know, be giddy as hell.
Mm-hmm.
But he's done it so much. I realize that's his catchphrase. But
come on, you sound like a bunch of old ladies with your knickers twisted up.
Oh, because we're not as
come
excited
on,
as you.
Come on, lighten up. It's fun.
Here's the thing I would say about it. I'm somewhere in the middle between you and Brian. I'm not crazy giddy about it, and I'm not like negative about it. It's somewhere in the middle. I'm kind of like, all right, I'll check it out. I mean, I do want to see it, but it does seem like a kind of Terminator greatest hits package almost.
Exactly.
And the biggest thing I got out of the trailer, it was cool seeing Arnie back. I think he's back in shape. You know, it's weird seeing him as old as he is play a character that's supposed to not age, but I'm sure the movie will explain that. But Jai Courtney, who plays Kyle Reese, even in a trailer, is boring as hell.
He's not interesting at all.
Even a little bit. No. Just because you are ripped as fuck doesn't make
disappointing.
In a trailer. How do you suck in a trailer? That just makes me nervous.
They keep trying to make him happen, and I just feel like it's not going to happen.
Tyler was
Jason Smith.
Oh, he's like Fetch. That's what he is. Jai Courtney is the new Fetch.
Stop trying to make Jai Courtney happen. But how awesome does Emilia Clarke look as Sarah Connor?
She's great. She needs to throw in a few accents, though, for me to get really giddy.
I've not had to hear her look for her dragons once in this.
Where is my John Connor?
But you're right, Scott. I mean, to your point, and this is one of the positive things about it, is that I did watch her and was drawn to her.
Yes.
But not because, but I could block her. I could block out the Game of Thrones stuff and focus on her as, you know, Sarah Connor.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, honestly, she was probably one of the brightest lights in that trailer.
I couldn't agree more.
All right.
She's the mother of robots.
Where is my robot?
All right, guys. You guys can watch these trailers and those from recent episodes at thehollywoodoutsider.com. If you got anything you want to chat us up about, hit us up on Twitter at @H_Outsider. Go into facebook.com/thehollywoodoutsider. Tell us what you think there and email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com.
Folks, we have got three films we're going to be talking about this week, all of them opening up on December 19th. The first one, and really, isn't this the only one we should be talking about? The Hobbit, The Battle of the Five Armies. This will be the finishing movie until the extended edition version of it comes out later. Ending the Hobbit trilogy, as well as most likely ending Peter Jackson's filming career concerning the Lord of the Rings and J.R.R. Tolkien, though, God, there are some other books. I'm sure they'll find a way to somehow eke out another trilogy.
Oh, please don't. Let it be done. Be done. Let it go.
Let it go, people. Ian McKellen, Martin Freeman, and Richard Armitage star, written by Peter Jackson, Fran Walsh, Philip Boyens, and directed by Peter Jackson. Bilbo and company are forced to engage in a war against an array of combatants and keep the terrifying Smaug from acquiring a kingdom of treasure and obliterating all of Middle Earth. Aaron,
mm-hmm.
I know you've seen all the Hobbit films. You've seen all the Lord of the Rings films. I wouldn't say you're as big a fan as I am, but I think you're a fan of these films. Mm-hmm. Are you ready to see it end?
I am. It's not the one thing I can say about it, and this kind of makes me almost sad, is it hasn't been as much as Lord of the Rings was for me, you know, where that felt like almost an experience, I guess. I think just because, you know, I'm so familiar with the book and I know it's been really, really stretched out to make three movies. It's just not the same, where I felt like the Lord of the Rings books are so much detail and he realized so much and it was so amazing to see that world come to life. Not as much in this one. I've kind of, it's kind of a been there and back again kind of thing. So, but I do love the story. I think it's going to be great. I haven't had one of these movies that disappointed me. I just haven't loved them as much as the original trilogy. So, but I will be there as soon as I can. As soon as I can. Absolutely.
I couldn't be any less interested in seeing this.
Fuck you. Move on, Brian.
Why don't you like that? Because you like Lord of the Rings.
I like Lord of the Rings, but I am. It's a trilogy that I can't sit down and watch the whole thing. I kind of I had to watch Return of the King like in three shifts. I couldn't sit down and watch the whole thing. It's just very, very long. Now, that has nothing to do with the Hobbit movie directly. I haven't read the books. I don't have the attachment to it. I keep seeing trailers for it, and it's not blowing me away like seeing trailers for the original trilogy and even the first Hobbit movie is. It just looks very shiny. I don't know how else to describe it. Just when you see all these massive armies, I don't know, with the original ones, is it the CG versus the practical effects thing?
It's a big difference for me. It really is, yeah.
It just looks too bright, whereas the other ones just felt too gritty, and I'm not super attached. Again, I haven't read it, so I don't know how it ends, so you'd think I'd be really excited, but I'm just having a hard time. I'm having a hard time getting excited about it.
And go watch the first 5 minutes of Lord of the Rings, and you'll know kind of how it ends.
Well,
spoiler alert, Bilbo makes it home.
Shit.
Frodo dies in the end.
Frodo.
Brian, what about you? Are you pumped for this?
You know what? I am excited. We've actually, me and a few guys from work, we went to see the second movie at the midnight showing. We're going this year also. And I think I'm probably more excited for that aspect of it than this movie. I'm glad to see it wrap up. I do love this movie. This is one of my favorite stories, the whole six movies. I mean, it ranks up there to me with Star Wars. But again, I do believe that the overindulgence of the CGI in this versus the Lord of the Rings trilogy really diminishes the quality of it. And I think seeing physically the armies of Uruk-hai charge down a hill, granted, you know, when they, by the time Return of the King rolls around and you're seeing, you know, these giant mammoth looking, you know, hairless mammoth looking things with guys riding them. All right. I know that wasn't real, but you know,
so.
But whenever they had giant fighting scenes and stuff, they, if there was any sort, any halfway close combat, it was always, you know, physical effects. It wasn't CGI. And that was my issue with the first Hobbit movie, was there was, you know, Azog and all these other characters. I'm like, all of a sudden they're, you know, they're using all of these CGI for all these different characters. And it just, it felt like an overindulgence.
An overindulgence.
A glorified cartoon.
I never got that. I actually thought he was a real character until you guys told me.
What?
Yeah, he looked as real as any other character.
No, he did.
You were high.
But see, the difference, though, is a lot of what happens in The Hobbit places that character in environments that are largely CG created, whereas a lot of the Uruk-hai were filmed directly in New Zealand, where you would have seen a greater difference between the reality of the scenery and the CGI of the guys.
Every time you see Azog, and for those who don't know, then he's that gray white looking guy that had the snaggly teeth and was, you know, the main villain through these first couple of movies. You know, every time you see him, he's fighting somebody. I haven't seen him in an environment that says, well, he specifically needs to be a CGI character. Everything that he's done, I haven't seen where they could not pull that off, especially after watching the first three 10 years ago, that they couldn't pull that off, that character off.
I'm just telling you, I thought he was real until you guys told me the difference.
Do you have glasses?
What about the Goblin King or whatever it was down
there? Oh, that one was bad. If you say that looked real, I'm going to punch you over the microphone.
It didn't look real, it looked like a CG creation. I guess when I go to a theater, maybe I'm just not as interested, you know, in poking at it as I'm watching it.
I'm just watching it
unfold.
That's not poking. It's obvious.
If it doesn't leave, why does it make you guys suspicious or angry that I don't sit there and just see these negative or these?
Because you say it as we're being negative, and we're not being negative. It was obvious to us. I don't consider that a negative.
It's a difference.
It's a difference like based on the first series.
It seems like you guys are acting like I'm ignoring things or I am making shit up.
No, but maybe your rose-colored glasses are
Maybe that could be it. Maybe I am too rose-colored, but when I'm watching these movies, I'm just watching all the shit flow over me from the screen. I'm not sitting there examining every little thing. Now, when I watched the little bit I saw, that high frame rate shit, yeah, this shit looked terrible. And I don't know what the fuck Peter Jackson's thinking in wanting that to be the next trend in filmmaking. Fuck that.
He burned me out of that. If it becomes like fantastic, it'll take forever for me to go because he burned me out of that high frame rate.
But as far as just the movie itself, I just watch it. I don't wonder, is this CG? Is this real? It is what it is. And yeah, unless it's terrible, and I guess you guys have finer eyes than I do.
No, it's
doesn't leap out at me.
To me, it's like the original Star Wars trilogy versus the newer one, where they both have, because a lot of those practical effects, they feel more like you're involved, or there's more of an attachment there than just seeing some, even subconsciously, you know that these characters are CGI. I mean, you can still get into it. You can still get into the drama that's going on. It's not like we're like, oh, this person's not real, this sucks, because they're not really fighting. It's nothing like that. It's just there's a little bit less of a connection.
When I look at a
glorified cartoon character versus two people actually having a some sort of a struggle.
Here's how I would explain it. Take the first series. There's a minimal amount of CGI. I mean, there is CGI. And Gollum is really the only main CGI creature. And it works great because it's minimal. You know, it's the only one on screen. Whereas you go into the new series, it's very much like Brian said, like the new Star Wars trilogy, newer Star Wars trilogy, where it's just, it keeps putting too much CGI to where it's distracting for some people. Not everybody, obviously, but for some people where it's too distracting. And I think that's the difference is I feel like he overdoes it in this series, where in the previous series he only did it where he had to. That was the only way Gollum could really come to life. Mm-hmm. And it worked great. I mean, it was revolutionary. And I think he just kind of went a little too overboard.
Yeah, the CGI was more of an ingredient as opposed to like almost the main dish.
Yeah, movies aren't bad at all. I think they're all entertaining so far. That's just a thing. Well, let's move on. We got other movies to talk about.
Next up, Night at the Museum, Secret of the Tomb, directed by Sean Levy, starring Ben Stiller, the late, great Robin Williams, as well as Owen Wilson, Ben Kingsley, and Rebel Wilson. Larry spans the globe, uniting favorite and new characters while embarking on an epic quest to save the magic before it is gone forever. Brian, any interest in this at all? Am I the only one who could care fuck less?
No. I mean, I'm on board with you on this one. I had no idea this movie was even coming out until about 3 or 4 days ago.
Yeah, same here.
Which, even considering how many big name actors, A-list people are in this movie, or even B-list, you know, considering how many people are attached to this movie, to really just kind of be springing it on you at this hour and saying, oh yeah, by the way, this movie's out, is just, to me, that kind of speaks to how probably likely bad this movie is.
Well, they've been playing trailers for a couple months. I've seen trailers for it.
And they're marketing the crap out of it, too.
Did you see the trailers during the commercials?
I did not.
I don't watch commercials.
I didn't watch them.
I've missed it. Sorry, Scott. I've missed it. And while I really liked the first one, was entertained by the second one, I'm not really rushing out to see this one.
So. I feel pretty much the same way. It's nothing I'm going to rush out by any means. I don't even know if I'll make a point to watch it on DVD. But I will admit, I laughed more than once in this trailer.
Really?
Yeah.
At what, the monkey pissing on the midget?
No, that was dumb. I thought the thing at the end of the trailer where they're having the statues of the lions chasing the flashing lights, it just struck me as funny.
That one was funny.
I thought that was funny. And the whole thing with the caveman that looks like him, I think it is him playing the caveman, right? Mm-hmm. And the whole,
yeah,
like, I know I get it. I look like, kind of look like you, but we're not related. That struck me as funny. This is something I would love to take like a niece or nephew to. Like I use that excuse a lot for some of these younger kid movies. But
Ben Stiller has been the same character and outside of Walter Mitty, like the last 47 movies, mm-hmm. as far as I'm concerned, and I'm just tired of it.
To be fair, he is the same character as the last two movies.
Well, that's true. But, I mean, in every series he does, he's the same guy. And mm-hmm. it just feels like, okay. You know, honestly.
Is he the Jason Statham of comedy?
He is the Jason Statham of comedy. Let's just call us Ben Stiller 42. I just have no interest. I'm with everybody else. Bleh.
I didn't even see the second one. I am so uninterested in this series. Last up, Annie. This is a remake of the beloved musical. It's directed by Will Gluck. It stars Jamie Foxx, Kwasani
Kavanzana
Wallace. Thank you. Rose Byrne. Oh, Cameron Diaz. I'm looking for any other names of note. None are jumping up at me. Yeah. Rose Byrne's in it too. I like her quite a bit.
I think you said her, but she's so good. Say her twice.
Did I? Mm-hmm. Oh, she's good enough. I'll say it twice. A foster kid who lives with her mean foster mom, Cameron Diaz, sees her life change when business tycoon and New York mayoral candidate Will Stacks makes a thinly veiled campaign move and takes her in. Now, Scotty, you are by far the biggest fan of musicals amongst the four of us, though I do think that Brian Williams harbors a very secret love of all things musical and Glee related. Are you interested in seeing this remake where they change the color of that girl?
I really am. I think
Scandalous!
I think it looks awesome. I really do. The trailer is really well done. They've remastered, obviously not remastered, they've redone the songs. Given it a modern twist, I can't wait to see it. My only downside, and I've said this before, is I think Cameron Diaz looks like she's overacting in the trailer.
Like, horribly.
Like, really bad.
Overacting in a musical? Are you shitting me?
There's a difference between overacting, musical overacting, and...
Cameron Diaz overacting.
I mean, yeah.
She should teach classes in overacting, because... Now, it could work in
she's
the...
She's putting on a clinic.
She is. It might work in the actual
school. And I would argue, too, that overacting in a musical is done more on stage than it is in film. In film, you get... It feels more like a movie except for during the musical numbers. Mm-hmm. During the rest of the movie, it's a normal film. Mm-hmm. And then they break out in a song once in a while, and then obviously everything's over-exaggerated, and people in the streets are joining in, and they all know the song for
some
reason. I
want this to happen in my life. I want to be walking around, and like a bunch of little orphans or whatever just burst into song because they're so happy that they're orphans, whatever, right in front of me, and I want to see them dancing around on this. I think that would be fantastic to witness. Like a flash mob with a good beat.
Mm-hmm.
I think this movie looks great, man.
Flash orphans?
Flash orphans. There you go. That sounds very inappropriate. I definitely want to see it. I think this looks like one of the most entertaining movies of the entire season, honestly. Looks great.
Ryan?
I'll tell you what. It does appeal to me more than I pretty much anticipated it, that it was going to, I guess, appeal to me. But it's – I don't know how much I'm going to rush out to see it. But it does. I mean, Jamie Foxx looks great. I mean, but I agree with you about Cameron Diaz. She just seems a little more over the top than where the rest of them are playing comedic elements. She just kind of looks like she's slapstick.
Mm-hmm.
So,
exactly.
What about you, Justin?
I think it looks cute. You know, I've never seen Annie in any form other than maybe. As I'm changing commercials, so I have no attachment to the material at all.
Have you ever heard the music?
No, just whatever I may have caught as I'm walking through a department store, or as I said, switching through channels. I haven't. But
great,
every time I see a new
music.
Trailer, it looks cuter and cuter and funnier. It's not a theater movie for me, but I'll definitely check it out when it hits video.
And I said this before, too, but I think one of the most appealing things about this movie is just how happy she is.
She's a great actress.
You know
she
what I
really
mean?
Is. I mean, she's so adorable.
We've gotten into so many – I mean, even with things like Hunger Games and everything is just like kids just are depressed in movies. And I just like seeing that lighthearted innocence. Everything is happy. Everything's awesome.
She's going to win
Optimism.
Him over.
Yeah. Him and his stacks of cash.
Can't wait.
Well, there you go, folks. Three films: The Hobbit, Battle of the Five Armies, Night at the Museum, Secret of the Tomb, and Annie. Of these three, which are you guys most likely to head out to a theater and check out? Aaron?
I'll be honest. I did not think it was going to be a toss-up, but it's pretty close. But I'll still see Hobbit first because it's closing it out.
Brian?
Annie. Not really. The Hobbit.
Scotty?
For me, it's Annie.
I'm pretty close. I want to go with you, Scott.
Yeah?
I want to see it.
Until you can hold hands and sing together.
Oh, I mean, I will burst out in song in the middle. The sun will come out tomorrow. I will do it.
Get your bottom dollar.
Mm-hmm. Or A Hard Knock Life. I love that song. It's a hard knock life.
Well, I have already purchased my ticket next Wednesday to see The Hobbit. So
are you doing the trilogy? Are you doing the marathon?
Fuck no. I got a job.
So next week...
I recently watched the extended edition for Desolation of Smaug. I'm good. I'm caught up.
Next week when we do our podcast, we will be recording right after Justin got done, high off the juice of The Hobbit.
I'll come home just sick from all the buttery popcorn.
Oh, it'll be fantastic. We'll get a fresh review from Mr. McCummer. I'll try to see it, but I doubt I'll be able to. So,
I'll be seeing it Tuesday night. So,
Will you really?
Yep.
Oh, there's a Tuesday night show. That's right. Maybe I can see it.
Yeah.
Oh, that would just ruin. That would just ruin Justin if we sent him all messages. Tuesday night, let's all go see it, and then just email Justin with however we can spoil it.
Hell no, I even kind of want to do that.
No, Scotty wants to see it. Justin's like, that's not cool.
Luckily, I can delete emails without having to read them.
box office really was a slow week at the box office. Hunger Games made $22 million. It's got $258 million total. It's going to end up almost $100 million behind Catching Fire, but it's one of those part ones, so you know that might be a reason why.
Still, $258 million ain't nothing to sniff at.
No, I'd like to have that in the coffers. Penguins of Madagascar, $10.9 million. It's got over $50 million total now. It's kind of a flop. They really thought that Madagascar spinoff would be huge. It's not. Horrible Bosses 2, 8.4 million for 36 million. It's kind of not doing well either, which is sad because it was really funny. And I just rewatched the first one. I still don't like it. I still didn't like the first one.
Top three
I
movies.
I still like the first one.
It's one of the, here's the thing. The first movie, the movie is funny whenever those three are together. That's when I think it's funny. And in this movie, in the second one, they're always together, which is why it's hilarious. Whenever they were separate, I didn't find it funny in the first movie.
I do have to say I agree with you guys now. I'm so over Charlie Day.
The screaming?
I was kind of back, you know, in his corner for a while, but I'm so fucking tired of him. He just does the same shit all the time, over, and in him, it's annoying.
Yeah.
What's this movie?
Well, what's this movie? Each week we play ours or a listener suggested clip from a... What's this movie? What's this movie? Each week we play ours or a listener suggested clip from a movie. And if you think you know what the clip is, email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. And next week we'll give you a proper ho shout out. Last week's answer was Justin's, and it was Conan the Barbarian. Those that got it correct. Actually, Craig Schermerhorn, you got one the week before. My God, I'm sorry, man. I forgot to put it on there. Those that got Conan right. Jacob Bai, Inga Kolstad, Linton Bowers, you didn't leave a name, but Carpmente, Sharp, Sean St. Clair, Sharp, Sean St. Clair, John Davenport, and Ashley Stewart. Hi, Ashley. We haven't heard from you in a while.
Yeah, where's she been?
This week it is Scott Stern. If you think you know what this clip is, email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Here's your clip.
How come you never learned that it was wrong? That there are certain things you do not do. You do not do in a civilized society.
Yeah, what civilizations are we talking about?
Oh, shut up.
I mean, history.
Shut up! Everything about you is a lie. Everything. Stay away from me.
Debbie, don't go!
You don't get to have me!
All right, now let's go to reviews where we review any new releases or some things that are on video on demand. Justin, you just saw Begin Again. What is Begin Again?
Begin Again is a film written and directed by John Carney, who previously had done the film Once, which had a lot of music in it. This one, the exact same. It stars Keira Knightley and Mark Ruffalo and Adam Levine. A chance encounter between a disgraced music business executive and a young singer-songwriter new to Manhattan turns into a promising collaboration between the two talents. I watched this on a night when I just couldn't find exactly what I wanted to watch movie-wise. I was flipping through every Hulu, Netflix, iTunes, and then this popped up and I thought, I meant to see this. Let's check it out. It is fucking fantastic. I really thought Scott had seen this and reviewed it already, but when I researched it, I didn't find any reviews from Scotty.
Have you seen this? I have not. I intend to.
You should see it. It is fantastic. Mark Ruffalo plays this guy named Dan, who started a record company with a friend of his, but over the years, just the projects he had worked on just never panned out for big money. He becomes a bit of a drunk. He's got family problems. And just in the worst day of his, practically of his career, he happens to walk into a bar and sees Keira Knightley sitting on a stool with a guitar, singing and playing. And he becomes inspired. He goes to her, begs her to let him represent her, try to get a career going. And the film follows them as they start making a record of her and some musicians recording in different locations across New York, out there and, you know, in the live mean streets, capturing all that sound. What really shocked me first, Keira Knightley is a goddamn good singer.
Is it her voice they use? Is it really?
It is her. She sings it.
Okay.
Every song with her is her. What really shocked me though, is how much I like Adam Levine. Yeah, most people would know him either from The Voice, where he's one of the judges.
Oh, they know who he is.
Yeah, or he's his lead singer of Maroon 5. I've never heard Maroon 5, don't care, don't give a shit, until now. Hearing him sing in this movie, he has got one of the best voices I have ever heard. And his range from, you know, soprano up to just the deep notes, he's got it. He's a fantastic singer, and he's a good actor. Everybody involved is good. The music is good. The locations are great. It plays with time a little bit in the beginning of it. I thoroughly enjoyed Begin Again. I think it's better than Once.
Wow. Though
I think some of the music in Once is a little bit better. But all in all, $1 out of $10, I give this a serious 8.5, coming up on a $9. It is thoroughly entertaining, especially if you're a fan of music. Mm. It's so good.
I could have seen it for free.
They did. The AMC like had a free come see.
You should have seen it. Yeah. You really should have. I'm shocked. I'm surprised she's not singing. You know, having a singing career.
Now I got to hear cool. Just hear Keira Knightley.
I'm definitely gonna check it out. And if you do check out Maroon 5, Justin, listen to the first album, Songs About Jane. That's where they're not pop yet. It's okay. much better.
Okay. Cool.
The Theory of Everything tells the story of noted physicist Stephen Hawking and the relationship with his wife, Jane Hawking. For those unaware, Stephen Hawking was diagnosed with ALS decades ago, and Jane elected to stay with him through a lot of those troubling times. This film particularly follows them through many years up until Hawking's very brilliant book. If you've never read it, A Brief History of Time is a great book. Basically up until that book came out. This is one of those actors' movies where Joe Public is going to thumb their nose up at it for the most part, and film snobs are going to eat this shit up. It's one of those, I'm going to say up front, I don't think it should be nominated for an Oscar for Best Picture. I know that's going to be on a lot of top best of lists, but it really didn't blow me away in that way. It blew me away in terms of the acting, though. Both of these guys, Eddie Redmayne and Felicity Jones, they both deserve to be nominated. Eddie Redmayne has the showier role because he's Stephen Hawking, and he does so much with just his eyes and character tics that he keeps it from being one of those roles where the actor is screaming, you know, look at me, I'm crippled, you know, that kind of shit.
He's going full handicap.
Yeah, he didn't go full handicap. He's not like, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis, give me the Oscar, where that's what I feel like he does in every movie. It felt like a genuine, warm, real performance. He did a very nice job. But what I thought was the more difficult role was Felicity Jones's Jane Hawking, because a lot of times in movies like this, when someone's handicapped, the director completely forgets that there's people that have to take care of these people. And here, the director, James Marsh is his name, pays special attention to that. And Felicity, in my opinion, just steals every scene she's in. Even though she's playing with this guy doing a great job as Stephen Hawking, I think she captivated me. She's one of those performers where I just couldn't take my eyes off her. She's sweet, she's strong, she's flawed. And there's a moment in the film, and I can't spoil it for anyone, where she does something that I think will challenge every audience member. Like, this is the moment where you either hate her or you're completely on her side, you understand her. And because of her performance, I was still on her side. I think any other actress takes that, they lose you in that moment. And you'll know when you see it. Theory of Everything is a film about the relationship. His science and his book are present. The disease is there, but it's not really the focus. It's really their relationship, and that's why I thought this movie was special. If $10 is the full price of admission, this one is worth $7.50.
I look forward to seeing Eddie Redmayne in Jupiter Ascending. I think it'll be the first film I see with him in it.
You saw Les Mis, didn't you?
No.
So even in a film about Stephen Hawking, you find a connection to the Wachowskis. That's what I got out of that.
I got mad skills, bro.
Let's go to DVD,
it's like the Kevin
and,
Bacon game, but
DVD and Blu-ray, Scott.
We're looking for releases on December 16th. First up, we've got Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. This is a live-action movie based on the 90s movies, based on the TV cartoon, based on the graphic novel. If you'd like to hear us talk about that, we talked about it on episode 153, where Aaron gave it $6 out of 10.
It was entertaining. It really was.
The Maze Runner. Thomas.
Whoa. I reviewed it, too.
No, we didn't care about you.
Okay.
You probably gave it an 18.
I did not see your score.
I'll probably give it a good 7.5.
You saw it after it came out.
Oh, is that what it
Maybe
was?
Maybe I did, but yep. I saw it again when I downloaded it from iTunes. It's still solidly fun.
I couldn't figure out why I didn't have a score, because I saw it with you.
I don't know. Maybe I didn't like your score. Maybe you weren't on that episode. I don't know.
You just disagreed with me, so you just removed my score?
That's what I'm going to start doing.
Who are you, Kim
Maybe
Jong-un?
Maybe you got self-esteem issues or something.
Maybe.
The Maze Runner. Thomas is deposited in a community of boys after his memory is erased, soon learning they are all trapped in a maze that will require him to join forces with fellow runners for a shot at escape. Now,
I saw it long after it came out.
Okay, that's what it was.
It is a very good movie. I was surprised how good it was. That kid is really good in it.
Is it? I'm really excited to see that one. This next one, I'm really surprised, is on video already. It seemed like it just hit theaters. This Is Where I Leave You.
How well it did.
Yeah, exactly. It's with a cast, Jason Bateman, Tina Fey, Jane Fonda, Adam Driver, better known as the villain from episode 7, Rose Byrne, and more. When their father passes away, four grown siblings are forced to return to their childhood home and live under the same roof together for a week, along with their oversharing mother and an assortment of spouses, exes, and might have beens. The fact that this is coming so quickly to DVD scares me, because the trailer was really good, really made me want to see it. And
so was that Men, Women, and Children trailer, and that thing made like $8. And critics savagely abused it. So
The last film we've got on DVD and Blu-ray is The Skeleton Twins.
I want to see this. It's supposed to be good.
It looks, yeah. And it looks like two of them being funny, but not. It's Kristen Wiig and Bill Hader, who we've seen in movies together before, but this one seems like it's got a little bit more serious tone. It's got some humor in it, but having both coincidentally cheated death on the same day, estranged twins reunite with the possibility of mending their relationship. It sounds like a real sweet movie. That is definitely on my radar to check out. Lastly, we've got two television series. The first is Extant, the season 1, and then The American season 2.
Yeah, I'll probably catch up on Extant now that I can watch it all at once.
A show you might want to check out. It's on Hulu, or not Hulu, on Netflix now. It's called Helix. It's good.
I've heard about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Extant, you could have watched on Amazon Prime. You know, you can catch up on Prime. I think it's been on that for a while now.
I don't have Amazon Prime. I mean, I have Amazon Prime, but I have a family account, so I don't have the main account, man. So I don't get to watch the free stuff. That's how that works. But I pay a lot cheaper than you do. So, From the Outside In, each week we talk about a topic that's on ours or our listeners' minds. This week, trilogies.
I feel like there's going to be a lot of debate this topic.
I'm sure there is. And before we go into it, trilogy means a series or group of three plays, novels, movies that, although individually complete, are closely related in theme, sequence, or the like. That's the literal translation. The funny thing is, it means something different to everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So we're gonna talk about that a little bit. Ever since Star Wars, the word trilogy has been thrown around to describe basically every three movies you can think of. What really, for you, constitutes a trilogy?
I focus in on the continuation of story and theme. I know my personal definition differs probably from most people, but I like my trilogies need to follow a singular storyline throughout all three films, books, games, whatever. And it really the only, I think, probably true example of this are movies that are based on trilogies of books. Because there's no film that I know of that three movies came out, all of them conceived of and written and created at one time. Normally, like with Star Wars, you know, George Lucas wrote the one film. It was a self-contained movie. Put it out there. Only later, because it made a lot of money, did he get to make more. Same thing with The Matrix. Self-contained, sure, there's a bit of a dangling thread at the end when he takes off. But for the most part, it's self-contained, complete, done. Wherein the other two were created afterwards when it had found success. I like all three of my films to need the others in order for them to be really considered a trilogy. So no, I don't consider the Indiana Jones movies a trilogy, or any three movies where each one is its own storyline. That's how I look at it, but I know I'm a lot different than others.
No, I'm actually with you on that, Justin. For me, I feel like, and we're going to talk about ones that we think aren't trilogies that are considered trilogies later, but it bugs me when people group movies together in a trilogy that either don't have anything to do with each other or just have one little thing in common with each other. I like that common story that goes through three, that you're watching one and then you can't wait to see the next. To me, that's a trilogy. I will also say that a trilogy has the letters T-R-I in it, which means three. It's from the Latin word, right?
Mm-hmm. Quad, we're getting our learning on tonight.
Quad is four. So if you tack on a crappy fourth movie in your previously known as trilogy, it's no longer a trilogy, no matter how crappy that movie is.
I don't agree with that.
I'm sorry. If you decide you want to throw in a crappy fourth movie in there, that's your...
Does that mean that Star Wars is null and void?
That's a.
There's six. Last I counted.
Yeah, I don't.
Potentially seven.
Yeah, but those second three were prequels. So
we have we can change these rules as we see fit.
We have two trilogies because the prequel trilogy focuses on trilogy Anakin means Skywalker.
Three.
The original trilogy focuses on Luke Skywalker. So they are. Two different
sounds
sets
like a
of
sex
trilogy.
And yes, and since you Sexology. Set the rules earlier as that trilogies mean different things to different people, yes, we can change the
we there we go
change the rules as we see it.
Exactly. And plus, since we're going to have 9 Star Wars movies, who's going to call it a nonology? I mean, that's
Brian. How do you see a trilogy?
I'm just about quote Justin there. I like the same story to kind of continue from beginning to end. I like the fact that, I mean, I think he said it best where the movies need each other. And I just because maybe the same character is in the all three movies, to me, it's one of those technicality things. It is made by the same director, or it does have the same character in it, but maybe the three different, maybe the stories are different. It's not quite good enough for me. I think to qualify as a true trilogy, it should be, hey, we're starting here, we're going to end up here, and it's going to take us three movies to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily, and this isn't a hard, fast rule, but just because one movie does a really good, okay, now let's make a couple of more so we can squeeze out more money.
I get
and,
that.
And how do we classify something like Twilight? Twilight is four movies, but they made the third story into two parts.
We don't, Brian. We just ignore those completely.
Okay.
That's really
Or Hunger Games.
There you Hunger go. Games. It can't be a trilogy if there's four according to you.
But there's three books.
According to your rule, the movies, there's four.
It's
yeah.
But it's three it's the you know, the third story is broken into two. Helps.
I don't know. You can't make rules and then start changing them around.
I would call it a trilogy of books, but I would not call it a quadrology of movies either.
See, here's how I see it. I totally think that there are several trilogies out there where they did make a shitload of money, so somebody came along and made a fourth or fifth or whatever movie. I don't think that takes away from the initial trilogy. I consider Indiana Jones a trilogy because I think the character change. And I actually think the timeline has to go in order. I think Temple of Doom comes before Raiders and da-da-da-da.
Mm-hmm.
But those, there is an ending. There is a growth of characters. They are individually contained as the characters as well grew. So to me, that works as a trilogy. The fourth one, fuck that movie. And then you've got something like Spider-Man where, you know, you've got three movies, but there's really...
That are all the same movie.
That are really the same movie, yeah. But there's no real... I mean, yes, you've got the goblin that carries through and Harry kind of evolves and Peter kind of evolves, but it really doesn't feel like those characters evolved to me. So I wouldn't call them a trilogy, just a series. So I guess I see it a little similar and a little different at the same time. I think Aliens counts as a trilogy because those first three movies, I think, is Ripley evolves as a character to the final movie to where it finally ends. Then they made that shitty fourth one that unfortunately Joss Whedon wrote. You know, hey, everybody's got a black mark on their record, man.
Wait, let me ask you a question in that regard then. Suppose, hypothetically, that fourth Alien movie and the fourth Indiana Jones movie were awesome. Those were fantastic movies that were better than even the first ones. Like, again, hypothetically.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good
Very
movie.
Very hypothetically.
Right? Very hypothetically. Those were fantastic movies. They were so good, mm-hmm. blew away the other movies, and really wrapped it up in a nice little bow. Is it now no longer a trilogy? Do you not include that fourth one? And is the fact that the fourth movie is crappy make...
I would still see it as a trilogy, and they made another movie that's awesome. That's how I would see it. I'm sorry. Are you snorting at my personal opinion?
No.
Yeah. Well, look, you got
that is stretching.
I don't think it's any different than what I said. It's no different than if the fourth one's a shitty movie. I'm saying that there's still a trilogy, and then they made more because it made more money, and it turned out to be a great movie, or it turned out to be a shitty movie. It doesn't matter the quality. I still consider those three movies a trilogy if they complete some kind of arc. And I think Indiana Jones completes an arc. And if you go watch The Last Crusade. That last scene completed the arc of that character. They didn't need, you don't need the fourth movie. You don't, there is no necessary environment for him to go into. He basically, his arc is complete. I can watch the end of that movie and I feel like that series is complete. And I can watch the end of Alien 3 and I feel like that series is complete. The fact that they made a shitload more movies because they're greedy consumerists has nothing to do with how I see it. And if those other movies were turned out different and they were awesome, wouldn't change how I felt about the first three.
That's what I wanted to know.
Yep. Now, can a trilogy exist with separate stories? We kind of touched that, but what do you think?
Well, I mean, of course it can exist, but one thing you got to consider when a filmmaker is making a trilogy, they don't start out making a trilogy. They start out making a single film that they hope sells well and can turn into a trilogy. So to some degree, they almost have to make it work as a standalone movie just in case it doesn't work. And they're not going to be able to make a trilogy. They're not going to be able to make a second and hopefully a third one. So by default, they kind of got to let it stand on its own, even if the source material is from a trilogy. It really takes some clever writing to kind of bring it back to see when and if that first movie is going to make it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does.
So I think it can happen, but it almost kind of has to in that regard because they don't know if it's going to work.
Absolutely. And there's some – I think Lord of the Rings is really the only exemption to this where those movies don't necessarily work as individual movies.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of hard to – I mean, you can see them because you know what happens, but I think it'd be very hard to just pick one up and you don't know anything about it and watch the middle one and get what's going on.
But, I mean, that's why that movie was such a big gamble.
Yeah, it was. Absolutely.
It was huge.
But like Star Wars, you can watch Empire Strikes Back and you don't need to see Return of the Jedi because there is a completion. You know, I don't think you do.
Empire Strikes Back?
I don't think you do.
Wait, do you remember how Empire Strikes Back ended?
Yes, I remember how it ended. It ended.
They left to go look for Han.
Yes, and then people can use their imagination. I can use my imagination. I can see that movie and not have to see Return of the Jedi.
So you'd have been okay with Aliens ending with the way it did?
I like ambiguous endings. I think they're bold. So, yeah.
I like ambiguous, but when it comes to The Empire Strikes Back, to me that's not ambiguous. They purposefully left it incomplete because they knew they were going to be doing Return of the Jedi.
And what else in that whole trilogy was ambiguous? Nothing. So why throw in some random ambiguous ending? No, it's not ambiguous. It's like, say, Justin, it was left as a purposeful cliffhanger.
I'm saying I can watch that one and still enjoy it fine without Return of the Jedi. I remember I wasn't one of those people that walked out of Empire Strikes Back going, what the fuck? What happens? I was fine. I thought, wow, that was a great movie.
Well, it's not like...
Yeah, I mean, so did I, but I mean, it's still...
It's a great movie. I mean, fuck, what the hell's happened?
Yeah, I didn't have that, so I'm different.
Well, that's obvious.
Okay. Well, are there any examples?
Well, that one just really died.
Well, not to get too artsy, you know, not to get too artistic with it, but there are trilogies out there that do exist that they have no characters that overlap or story, but it's the theme.
Absolutely.
You know, there's a Three Colors trilogy. That's a series of French films that were directed by, oh God, how do you say his name? Krzysztof Kozlowski, based on Blue, White, and Red, which are the three colors of the French flag, and each of them tells a story that is based on one of the political ideals of the French motto of liberty, equality, and fraternity. They're a trilogy, but they have no overlap really of story or character. But he designed it as a trilogy.
Simon Pegg's three movies, they were basically... What was it? It had something to do with ice cream or
the Cornetto trilogy? Cornetto trilogy.
Something like that. You know. But basically it was there was a color of ice cream in each one of the movies, which
I wouldn't call that one a trilogy, Chief. I really wouldn't.
That's what they call it. That's what they refer to it as.
I get that, but there's no connection between the three and there's no theme connection. It's really three totally different movies where they threw ice cream in all three of them because it's the same
ice
actor.
Ice cream's not a theme.
Maybe they made
no ice cream's not a theme.
Maybe if they made a fourth one, would it be a trilogy then?
Now you're just being a dick, man.
It'd be a Sunday.
I'm sorry, but you negate your own theory when you've got six Star Wars movies. You can't say, "Well, there's two trilogies." It's either there's more.
Yeah, you can.
He can't have that rule, and it carries.
What,
no.
What rule?
The rule where he says it can't have more than three movies. You can't have that rule and have it not apply to Star Wars 2. I'm sorry.
How is it not
kidding.
Applying to Star Wars? You've got three films that are the,
you've got
the
six
arc
films.
Of Anakin.
You've got six
you've
films
got three
total.
Films that are the arc of
you've got six Luke. Films total. Yeah. I'm just saying by your rationale, you've got six films total. You can
yeah,
you
but
can,
they work.
This rationale
so
is fine.
We can tweak our
okay, Aaron.
Our theory.
You are completely. I almost feel like you're trying to create an argument just to create it. It is absurd to say that you can't have six films that you break off into two trilogies, especially considering three of them are devoted to one character and three of them are devoted to a completely separate character.
Shh. I'm not saying you can't do that. What I'm saying is, by his rationale that you can't have more than three movies, I disagree with that. I say that obviously that doesn't apply because Star Wars is two trilogies. It's six movies, two different trilogies. But if you have more than three movies in that series. So therefore, according to his math, it wouldn't work. That's what I'm saying.
I don't agree with you at all.
I don't subscribe to your math.
Well, let's move
on. You got funky math. You got that new math shit.
Are there any examples of a series of films often thought as a trilogy that are not?
This one may be a little, just to kind of continue the fighting, The Dark Knight.
How the fuck is that not a trilogy?
Because each of them is self-contained and individual, I don't think you need either of the other films around it to get a complete and in toto story.
You don't, Star Wars is Matrix. There's a bunch of them where you don't have to have Matrix 1, Star Wars 1.
No, with The Matrix, you got, yes it is, you follow Neo's arc from like,
you're
figuring
following
out
Bruce Wayne's
accepting,
arc.
Accepting whether he's the one, and then to the end where he's saves whatever mankind is.
How is that not any different from Bruce Wayne in those three movies?
Because the Matrix movies depend on each other.
You do
these,
you
these
do not the first
three
one ends.
Films
the first
do
one
not necessarily depend
ends.
On each other.
I don't agree with that at all. I don't even know.
I totally see what Brian is saying.
Well, you can mock me all you want. I still don't agree with
you. I'm not mocking you, Aaron, but I think you're trying to create some kind of concreteness to something that doesn't require it.
Exactly. And this is one of the more, I mean, this is
we've
one of the
all already said our views of a trilogy are going to be different. So I don't know why you're attacking people for their views on a trilogy.
I feel like
attacking is wrong.
You're attacking me. I just said, how is that not the same? And you're telling me how wrong I am. And I don't get why I'm wrong because you haven't explained how.
Part of it is you're trying to for us to come up with a concrete, hard definition of, I guess, place each one of these, what we consider trilogies, into a certain group and a certain room, so to speak. But this is a very ambiguous topic and way to classify what I perceive as a trilogy. And we've even acknowledged the fact that while this might be a trilogy or this is considered a trilogy, maybe it's not as much of a trilogy as something else. So we're kind of talking about degrees of trilogies, really. And I think something along the lines of Lord of the Rings is, to me, I guess maybe just a more blatant trilogy than The Dark Knight. I mean, yeah, it's got Batman through all three movies. It's made by Christopher Nolan. And yes, there are, there's certain, I guess, certain themes or whatever through each movie. But for basically what happens in the third one, you don't necessarily need the information from the first one to make the third one enjoyable. Most people would just rather drop the first and the last one and just watch the second one anyway.
I don't agree with that one, but the third movie definitely is the weakest, in my opinion. But what about you, Scott?
I've got a couple, actually. And this goes back to my whole theory of just because one guy makes three movies completely unrelated, mm-hmm. it shouldn't be considered a trilogy. John Carpenter's Apocalypse Trilogy. I don't think that should be called a trilogy.
John Carpenter's Apocalypse Trilogy.
Yeah. The Thing, Prince of Darkness,
yeah.
and The Mouth of Madness.
Absolutely, I agree with you. Yeah,
they're not even like.
I did too much homework.
There's no similar actors. There's no similar story. They're just all movies made by him, and it's called the Apocalypse Trilogy. I don't like
was
that
there
one.
Ice cream in it?
I don't know, and I don't think it's fair to call the Jersey Trilogy a trilogy either. There are some recurring characters and that kind of thing, but
you mean Kevin Smith?
Yeah, what did I say? I'm sorry.
No, I'm just saying. You mean the Kevin Smith movie?
Yes, yeah. Yes. Clerks, Mallrats, and Chasing Amy. Mm-hmm. I liked the movies. I think Chasing Amy is probably my favorite out of the three because it had that more serious, a little bit more serious tone to it. But that's not a trilogy. There's
his,
like maybe
his
two...
movies are more like Marvel's cinematic universe. They're all connected in some way.
But just a little bit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's just like a character that pops up here or there. They reference something that happened to another movie. But that's not a trilogy. There's no recurring story. There's no, you know, reason to come back. You're not like watching the second one because the other one was so good. The reason you go back and you see Mallrats is because you like Clerks, not because mm-hmm. you want to see those characters again. You just want to see more of that kind of humor.
Justin?
Well, I mean, you've already said you consider the Indiana Jones original three films a trilogy. I don't, mostly because other than the character of Indiana, there's no carry-through storyline. You know, they're all self-contained. Each one has its own villain, its own goals, and they really don't touch on each other, though. In the third one, of course, they reference a few things from the earlier films, but even so, you can watch the third one without having seen the first two and still come away with a really good experience. So, you know, I really don't consider that that kind of thing a trilogy. But and Brian already took the Dark Knight series. I don't really consider that a trilogy either, because it's the only real follow through on that is one character, but it's not a story, you know, where if Ra's al Ghul had planned his attack on Gotham through all three films, then I probably would call it a trilogy. But each one is its own self-contained story that's really not dependent on any of the others for anything. So
see, I guess
it falls outside of my view of what a trilogy is.
With that one, I just don't understand that argument, because it's basically the character going from scared, tortured boy to the hero that he became and then walking away from that. I mean, no, the series works as a trilogy for me. I guess
well,
I don't understand.
Well, I think the reason I don't is, okay, let's compare, say, the Dark Knight trilogy to the original Star Wars trilogy.
Well, I don't think
the original Star Wars takes Luke through a series of adventures, but there's also an overarching enemy and there's an overarching story of the rebellion fighting against the Empire to wrest control of the galaxy back. Within Batman, there is no villain that overlaps all three films. Each one has its own fight that he has to accomplish. Nothing in the first one really impacts the second, and it really doesn't impact the third. They're all so self-contained that that's what kind of breaks the trilogy aspect.
Right. I think what he's saying is if you watch the third, I see what you're saying too, and I actually
there's definitely
agree with
a
you.
Character arc.
Right.
Yeah.
That I don't
you're,
consider that.
But
enough.
You could
yeah,
agree.
Yeah. Exactly.
Hang on, Scott's talking.
But you could walk into Dark Knight Rises without having seen the two movies and be okay story-wise, as long as you know who Batman is at all. You know the Batman, the character, that you don't have to have seen the other two movies for it to make sense. If you walk into Return of the Jedi for the first time, again, those are very old movies, and have never seen A New Hope or Empire Strikes Back, it's not going to make any sense. Do you see what I'm saying?
I don't think that's necessary, but, I mean, to each their own. And that's not – well, we all have a different definition. So, hey,
right.
There you go. So, ultimately, what is your pick for the greatest trilogy in cinema history? Justin?
I would probably have to go with the Matrix trilogy, even though the first one is fairly self-contained. It's like Scotty said – either Scotty or Brian, one of you said earlier that you make the first film – with an idea for what you would do more of, but you have to make it somewhat self-contained because you may not get that chance. So make it self-contained, make money, and then hope for the best. I think that and from listening to the Wachowskis and in various interviews, they had an idea for what they wanted to do for the whole thing, but they started off with just that one film. You cannot watch the second one really without having seen the first, and you sure as fuck can't watch the third one without having seen the second and the first film. So they all flow. But if we're allowing just a 1 second runner up, it would be the Pirates of the Caribbean trilogy.
Nope, we're not. All right, Scott.
Well, my answer
great.
Might.
Fuck you too. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Well, again, that one's not a trilogy. There's four movies in it. So.
Well, but the three original films.
Hey, yeah, you're the one. You had that rule, jackass.
No, I didn't say in anything that a fourth film undid a trilogy.
All right.
The first three films followed Captain Jack Sparrow and the Black Pearl and his desire to keep that ship, which he got from Davy Jones. And so that's what the whole three films are. The fourth one starts an entirely different completely unrelated story. It is not a part of the first three, and therefore, to me, it's just the beginning of something else they wanted to do. The first trilogy is contained. It has an overarching story and character and theme.
All right, Scott.
Well, my pick might surprise you that it's not a certain series that has a DeLorean in it, but...
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, I toyed with it, but that's the Back to the Future series just has its moments that I don't feel like... I love all of it. I like watching all three of them, but I don't think they're all as quality films. Does that make sense? I just like them, but I wouldn't put them in like a high-level filmmaking kind of thing. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
But the three Toy Story movies, to me, all three individually are just really good movies. They all there's no overarching story between the three, but they're just all so good. They're all the characters work well in all three of them, and it ties everything up so well at the end. And I'm probably going to negate my whole thing with the fourth one coming out.
Yeah, because there's a fourth movie coming out.
So right now it's a trilogy, so that's why it's going to be my trilogy.
You want to hurry up and get it into the cat door?
Next time we have a Inside Out topic about trilogies, I will have to take that back. But for now, Toy Story is my pick.
All right. Brian?
You see, Justin, that's how you get in your honorable mention. Just what Scott did.
You like that?
So, what about you, Brian? Yeah.
I'm sorry, I've got to go with Lord of the Rings. The Back to the Future was also a consideration of mine because of the attention to detail with all the little tiny little threads that were connected, maybe props or whatever through the whole things. But I agree with you, Scott, by the third one, it was kind of getting a little bit hokey. But Lord of the Rings to me it was set out from the get-go. We're making three movies. We're going to shoot them all at the same time, right after another. And the way that it was just played out, and it was weird to watch a movie for 2.5 hours to have this just stop for the first one.
Mm-hmm.
reassuring to know that, next year I'm getting the next movie. And then of course it was the same thing with that one, the third, and it was bam, I'm getting my three movies. So to me, Lord of the Rings is just the penultimate trilogy.
Okay. I'm going with, and this is going to violate Scott's giant rules he's got on a plaque somewhere, but I'm picking the Scream trilogy, the first three movies. I realize that most people are going to be like, oh, that's not cinematic brilliance. I love that original trilogy, and especially love how they kept tying them together, even though there's no fucking reason why any of it should work.
Hmm.
But for me personally, I just thought that they were fun movies. They made a horror trilogy, and they made it all connect to where you understood why, in most of these, it's kind of ridiculous, but it's the same killer going after the same girl over and over. And this one, it's like there's different people, but they managed to connect that whole world, and I thought that was really well done. And the fourth one was supposed to be the beginning of a second trilogy. So, I guess maybe that's the exception, so that breaks the rules or whatever. But I really like that trilogy, and I have always enjoyed that whole series. Now, what are our listeners' picks for favorite trilogy?
Brad Peterson Sr. and Paul Hanahan said the Alien trilogy.
Jason Taylor said the Back to the Future trilogy.
Are you happy?
And of course I get Michael Hill because he gets his choice was the Dark Knight trilogy.
And he secretly says, fuck you, Brian.
Dustin Baker and Amanda Sink say George Romero's trilogy of the dead, which is Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, and Day of the Dead. I would pick a fight with that, but they're not here to fight back.
Wasn't there like four movies?
There's been like fucking seven or eight now, all of them following the dead.
Yeah, there's a lot of dead.
That's a lot of dead. A
whole bunch of dead.
Chris Owen says Indiana Jones.
I agree with you, Chris. I'm just saying.
Whatever. No, again. But okay.
Not no. You disagree. Doesn't mean no.
I disagree. I disagree.
All right.
There's four.
We're growing.
Scott Calgaro, Steve Peterson, Amy Hutchinson, and Michael Brudnell say The Lord of the Rings.
Carlos Hernandez and Slavi Kassan. I'll say Mad Max.
That's a good pick. That's an interesting pick, too.
David McGrath, Anna Maria Germa, Michael Pippitt, Brad Pempick, Stephen White, and Charles Patterson all said Star Wars, the original trilogy.
Marcus Shelton says The Godfather.
That's a good choice.
That is a good choice. Even though the third one, most people go, there's still a lot of good about it. And God, the first two just,
it's just hip to hate it.
It is.
Josh Stima and Troy Heinrichs all agree with Scotty. Toy Story.
Hey.
And we had two come in after the fact. Aaron Martinez said Dollars, the Man with No Name trilogy. That's the Clint Eastwood trilogy. Ooh, good. Yeah, that's a good one. Ed Wallach says The Hangover, not because I believe it, just to be contrary and difficult. They are kind of all connected. So, I mean, it is kind of that story. All right, next week's topic was a listener's request, and surprisingly, we've never done it. I was shocked. So just in time for the holidays, what is the worst movie ever? We're not going to get honorable mentions. I'm telling all of us, Scotty, that means you too and your sneaky little fuck way to do it. Brian, all of you. No honorable mentions. What is the absolute worst movie ever? So keep an eye on the Facebook page Tuesday night, Wednesday morning. We'll be asking you guys what you think as well.
Drive.
Remember, like us on Facebook. We have a Hollywood Outsider Facebook group for movie and TV fans, not just for fans of the show. It's for anyone who likes to talk about movies. Feel free to hop on over there and join up. Link is in the show notes. Also, review us on iTunes, and we will read your review on the show. We've got three. First one's from Australia. It's from Ronsley. He says, so cool. Great show, super funny, great reviews, and awesome predictions, which we probably get wrong most of the time. From Great Britain. Hello, Governor. It says, excellent, from March 82.
Class said, brilliant.
Hello, brilliant. Class banter, and they seem to enjoy all the same movies as me. One of my favorites.
Aww. I think he misspelled that favorites.
No, that's how the Brit.
Nah, place. That's Queen's English.
Yep, Queen's
no,
English.
No, it's misspelling.
It's like flavor.
Say it right, Justin.
And...
No.
Favorites. Not problem. Problems, plural.
And the last one's from the U.S., from Aaron Martinez. So it stands out from others in the category. The news is always informative and entertaining, but they keep it brief. I don't know about brief. And avoid getting wrapped up in rumors. The reviews feel like a fun conversation with buddies walking out of a theater instead of the pretentious nitpickery that bogs down other podcasts. You probably didn't listen to our
trilogy. That sounded like a British word, didn't it?
Nitpickery?
The pretentious nitpickery.
From the Outside In is my favorite part because it incorporates the old movies and shows we love and the ones we love to hate into a fresh conversation with a theme relevant to the week's current events. The only downside is that I get funny looks from people when I'm laughing out loud while listening through my headphones.
That was a really great review. Thanks, Aaron.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Appreciate it. And remember, go to iTunes, review us. It helps the show. Let's go to emails. Justin?
Hi, we got an email from Anna Marie Germa. She says, hi, guys. Nice show as usual. I've been catching up on older episodes for a few weeks now, and episode 100 came up as a must-listen, so I queued it up. Once I did, I had to write you. I think all of you have great chemistry, and it was great to hear some highlights from the first 2 years. I have to admit, though, Justin has become my new kindred. Why? Dead Poets Society. I adore that film, and it inspired me as well. I happened to write myself, super amateur, by the way, but there it is, and that film had a huge impact on why. We don't read and write poetry because it's cute. We read and write poetry because we are members of the human race, and the human race is full of passion. I love it. And now I have to start listening to the Dead Robot Society. In addition, I'm also a huge Star Wars geek. So to Justin, may the Force be with you. To Aaron, enjoy an extra large popcorn on me. I'm assuming this came with like some kind of
coupon, I hope.
Bitcoin or something.
I think she said for me, not on me.
Oh, you're right. She did. She said for me. I'm sorry.
Send me a pic.
Yes. To Scotty, keep on gaming. And to Brian, please drink responsibly. Have a good week, Hose.
All right. Brian?
All righty. This is from Leo from Connecticut. He says, hello, Hollywood Outsider crew. I'm a new listener to your show as I came across it as a website recommendation from another series I listened to, Guilty Film. I've been thinking about suggesting a topic for you guys to do on the show, and since award season is now upon us, can we talk about would-be Oscar contenders from the past that flopped with critics and moviegoers? The one example I want to mention is last year's failed Oscar bait vehicle, Diana, starring Naomi Watts in the main role. With that, This is my pick for a topic, and I can't wait to see what the three of you guys have got. So take it away.
We will be doing that. And also, Leo, you'll be happy to know that Kevin from Guilty Film will be coming over for a Hobbit special Brian and I are going to do coming up. So look for that around Christmas. But we are going to use that topic. We're going to use it next year, probably a little closer to at least Oscar nominations.
Probably sometime around May.
No, not that late. Scott?
I got a couple emails. First one comes from Roy Engstrom. He says, well, to start, I really like your podcast about the Star Wars movies. Those are my all-time favorite movies. You guys were really hilarious, and you had good points on certain ones. Midichlorians are the reason why they wouldn't get their dicks cut off. They would sense it with a force.
I disagree.
As for Jurassic Park, to me it's just another Jurassic Park movie. Granted, I will watch it, but I know what's going to happen. Exodus. I hope it's going to be really good. I'm really looking forward to the CGI and story, but I'm kind of on the fence about that. I really didn't like Noah. The story was horrible, and so was the CGI. Shout out to you guys, especially Scott. We've been friends since he was a young kid.
Aww.
It's a buddy of mine. We've also got an email from a guy named, I'm not sure how to pronounce his first name, Notleth?
Sure. Notleth?
Notleth Felton. He says, this was in response to our topic on the swords and sandals. He says, I only have one, and that would be Game of Thrones, one of my favorite TV shows. I would like to stand on my soapbox for a minute and say that Justin and Aaron were right a few weeks ago about how this country is going down. It's turning into that movie Idiocracy. My son uses a calculator for algebra. Algebra 1. Need Fuck. I say more?
Fuck.
People in grocery Fuck. Stores don't even know how to give out correct change without the register. I blame technology. Can you remember someone else's phone number that's close to you that you just got? Scott, God's going to bless you for choosing a career that you do. I used to drive a school bus, so I understand. I enjoyed my kids. It was one of the best jobs I ever had. Brian, thanks for letting me be in fantasy football again this year. I'm stinking up the joint. Again, the greatest podcast out there today. Keep up the good work. Been listening to your podcast since episode 6. I remember a time when Brian had the longest streak of not missing an episode. If I remember correctly, his power went out at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And Justin, one
he
more.
Gave that up.
And Justin, one more thing. From the immortal words of the poet, T.O., Terrell Owens, I love me some me. I always feel the same way about myself. You should never change. Not left Felton.
Oh, that's funny.
That's cool.
Nice. Stay to the credits for our Sons of Anarchy talk. We're going to hurry up and get to that because otherwise we'll run out of time. Go to thehollywoodoutsider.com. That's our website. Facebook.com/thehollywoodoutsider. Email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Subscribe on iTunes. Listen on your Stitcher Radio app or through your RSS feed. We did mention Scott's charity and Justin's book. Both links are in the show notes. And Brian, the Hollywood Outsider playoffs for fantasy football, where are we at? You and I are both in the playoffs, right?
Yeah, this year we both made it to the playoffs. If I remember correctly, last year neither one of us did.
Yeah, that's so, true, yeah.
Yeah, we were stinking up the joint, much like Felton is this year. But, yeah, actually, if you're a big fan of momentum, then myself and Wally Kulik are on a roll and should meet in the championship.
Well, okay then, Dick.
Yeah, if you're not a big proponent of that, then, you know, it's anybody's game. But Josh, is that Josh Steimer?
I assume so.
Anyway,
you're in charge of the league, Chief.
He's in first place. I'm in last. We're meeting this week in head-to-head. And Wally and yourself are going against each other to fight out who makes it to the next round. So it's been a lot of fun this year. And
yeah, thanks to everybody that played. The winner, or the one that gets the highest, who wins the highest, will end up coming on for a review of whatever they choose.
Yeah, I hope whoever it is, you know, they get second.
We got it, Brian. You want to win. I hope you lose so bad. All right, guys. Well, remember, the next time you go to a theater, buy popcorn. Right into this world, all alone. God takes your soul, you're on your own. The crow flies straight, a perfect line. On the devil's bed, until you die. Gotta look this life in the eye. All right, if you've not seen the Sons of Anarchy series finale, you'd best turn your shit off, because we're going to talk about it. spoiler, spoiler, spoiler. I think we've told them enough. What did you think of the ending? Justin, Brian, whoever wants to go for it. Justin, you have gotten the least amount of sleep because you stayed up late to watch this thing. You go first.
You know, I part of me really wanted something huge and action-packed with lots of people dying, lots of explosions, all sorts of mayhem and chaos. But I as the show went on, I know a lot of people thought it was boring, but I felt like this entire season had been nothing but explosives and action as Jax unwittingly, you know, because his mother is a stupid lying whore, tricked him into thinking it was the yellow, as the show likes to call them, the Chinese. He spent this entire season blowing everybody's shit up because of a lie. And so it was kind of fitting that the final episode be about seeing where are all of these characters, kind of where are they going, what is their send-off. I like that everybody got closure. I can't really think of any character that didn't get some kind of closure to their character. I felt like Jack's death was reminding me a little bit of City of Angels, mm-hmm. when Meg Ryan threw out her arms on that bike and ended up dying. I hate when people commit suicide by having other people do it for them. I hate that Michael Chiklis played, you know, has to go the rest of his fictional
destroyed life.
Having killed someone.
I love,
but having that said, I liked it. By the end of it, I was all right. It's done. It's finished everybody's story off. I'm closed.
I do want to just real quick on that. There are people on the internet saying, no, he sacrificed himself. Look, running into a truck, sacrifice, whatever you want to call it, is still suicide. Intentionally kill yourself.
Sacrifice? What?
Yeah.
What is he sacrificing himself for?
Our sins,
I think ultimately his children.
Our sins, according to all the Jesus imagery throughout the episode.
Jesus. Yeah. But I think for his children, I think he felt like it was best if he wasn't the living presence.
If he's so saintly and sacrificial and all this other stuff, so he's going to put somebody else, just strangers' lives in danger. Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't buy the sacrificing bullshit.
I don't either. I think, honestly, I get what Justin's saying. I actually agree that that's his mentality.
Right.
But ultimately, yeah, you're right. You're both right on this one. Because basically, Justin's right on his mentality. Brian's right about the actuality. He's going to basically destroy lives by doing this. But, you know, he's dumb. So what did you think, Brian? Did you like it? Didn't like it? What?
Overall, I did not like it. I felt like every episode was almost like a movie. They were each an hour and a half long. This episode alone probably could have been condensed with last episode in the same amount of time as just one of these episodes. I think you could have done everything. It was almost like last episode, he ties up all these loose ends with his immediate family and friends, and then this episode was all about the peripheral, associates, mm-hmm.
Taking like out Marks, taking out, yeah.
Yeah, taking out the loose ends out, outside. And to me, it just felt like, okay, I know this is what's happening. I know this is what he's doing. When is something going to happen that I don't know what's coming?
But that's kind of the catch 22, right? I mean,
yeah.
You want it to have a satisfying ending, which would ultimately be predictable. And then you want surprises, which might not result in a satisfying ending. So, I mean, I don't think Sutter wins either way in that respect.
You're right. And honestly, in kind of a little self-reflection here, there's probably no way I would be completely happy. Because on one hand, I don't want him to die. The other hand, he deserves to die. He deserves to die from about 20 different ways. The other side, I don't want him to live because he doesn't deserve to live. But I don't know. I just, it felt like it was milked out longer than it needed to be. maybe if it was just tighter.
That's what I think the problem has been this whole season is good story, mostly good some great episodes in there,
yeah.
But it definitely could have been tighter. And I think by giving him the leeway to make those episodes so extended throughout, I think you got a lot of padding that you didn't need because he is overindulgent writer to a degree. The one thing I had, I was trying to explain it to somebody earlier, and I guess I'm trying to explain it to you guys now. I like the ending. I thought it was fitting. What I didn't like was like the last minute. The one thing about Kurt Sutter that always drives me nuts is he always has to be so goddamn on the fucking nose, you know, and I think he thinks he's being brilliant. And some people that love the show will call him brilliant. I do not think it was brilliant. When you have to paint every, like, hey, it's a truck, says Papa's Goods, just like his dad. He's talking to a rock, and he's got to talk about, hey, a good outlaw and a good dad can't exist in the same man. You know, all that shit. He's riding his dad's bike on the same highway. Everything is so on the nose. And then, you know, the Christ analogies, the bread and the wine, all that stuff, it was just, okay, man, you're trying too hard. It doesn't need to be – you're trying to make a show deeper than it is. And at the very end – there's a scene where they're having that motorcycle chase and it pans up and you see the crows and the crows fly up into the sky and you got the CGI crow, which didn't look great, but it flies up in the air and it disappears, right? If they would have ended, it's kind of like The Hobbit, if they would have ended whenever, or the Lord of the Rings ended when everybody bowed. If they would have ended there, I think it's a great ending. I actually think, wow, that was good. But because Sutter is so indulgent and he has to get everything on the nose, he pans right back down, ignores that beautiful shot he just did, completes the chase, and he has him steer directly into that truck with one of the worst CGI shots I've seen in a long time, and his little Jesus pose. It just totally took me out of it. Totally. I don't know if you guys agree, disagree, or what, but that's how I felt.
I think I was too emotionally wrung out for it to bother or ruin the ending of it for me. I was exhausted after this season, and I was just kind of ready to see it be finished, so... I the fact that we actually got closure on so many characters, I have to give them credit for that, because a lot of shows, they don't do that.
That's true. Yeah,
just end and shit's just left hanging, and you have no idea what the fates are of these other characters. But we got that here.
Breaking Bad, they just did it. They did it almost perfectly, where it everybody got closure, but it didn't feel like it was just going down the line like at a wedding or a funeral or something, that just
check,
like, okay,
check,
hi, you know, my condolences or congratulations, whichever the case may be, and then just kind of keep going down the line. It was, this just kind of felt like, God, I just sat through an hour and a half of it last episode. Do I got to do it again? And then again, with the artsy fartsy stuff, I mean, a little of it would have been neat to find out later, like, oh, okay, that I see that, you know, you read in an article or something, maybe somebody observe a little bit more observant than myself or whatever, and go, oh, okay, well, wow, okay, these little parts here, the bread, the wine, okay, that makes sense. And but it was just kind of crammed, you know, just
hammered.
Yeah, just like, okay, for Pete's sake, I get it. And
the homeless lady, which I assume is like either the ghost from Hamlet or the Reaper incarnate. I don't know.
I've never noticed her ever.
Really? She's shown up.
That's how unobservant I am.
You really do get engrossed.
Most of the whole series, right?
I'm like, who the fuck is this chick?
She pops up all the time. Like whenever something big happens. And she is actually, I don't remember which episode, but it's some, I think it was like five or season five when he's in jail. He sees a picture and that girl is actually the wife that died. The girl is the wife that died in JT's accident. So she's like a guardian angel or the Grim Reaper, or literal interpretation might be the ghost from Hamlet, where in Hamlet, ghost is like, what, his father that came back?
Yeah.
I could see that. But I like that twist.
Had
that
it been left at just that,
mm-hmm.
that would have been fine, I think. I think it wouldn't have been, you know, it would have just been like, all right, cool. That's just kind of a, you know, that a little tie that runs through the whole thing and this mysterious character, and that would have been fine. But with all the other stuff, it just felt like, really, you're just trying way too hard.
I did like the moment with Chibs where he tells the cop, you know, I thought it was going to be really cheesy, and he's like, eh, I don't know. That's a horrible, horrible Irish accent.
Terrible. And he's actually Scottish.
Scottish whatever, where he basically just threatens her. I thought that was fantastic. Yeah. And when Jax just walks in and shoots RoboCop in the head.
Oh, Peter Weller. Oh, wasn't that great?
That was so good. No talk, no bullshit, just bam. Of course, tons of retaliation because he's still wearing the Sons of Anarchy jacket. I'm just like, shouldn't you take that off so maybe they don't all come back at the club again?
Yeah, after that whole mayhem vote, he took off the president patch. I thought he had to at least leave his cut there.
Yeah. Yeah, you would think. But hey, it's Jax Teller.
And what the fuck, Unser?
They that had this poor son of a bitch.
Well, I don't give a shit about him getting shot. For 2 years, we sat there and worried about him, you know, dying of cancer. And, you know, they made this big deal about it. It was a pretty big thing where he was practically on his deathbed. And all of a sudden, there's no talk of it at all.
Maybe he'd kicked it. You don't know. He doesn't tell you everything.
Exactly.
He's private. He's
I private don't guy. Know. You tied up all this other stuff. You got all this biblical references, you know, all throughout the, you know, show and everything. And you spend all kinds of time with that. How about hey, congratulations. I beat it.
Brian, I liked Brian had a point that Kurt Sutter actually ums and pauses and uhs more than he does, which is pretty accurate.
Oh, man.
I haven't had a chance to watch that yet, but I left it on the DVR.
That one was actually good. Last night's was good.
He is a horrible, horrible host.
He is. But, I mean, he's a writer.
What the fuck's that mean?
Well, you're more entertaining than him, man. Sincerely. I mean that with all the compliment in the world, Justin. Not just stroking your ego.
And I could not agree more. Could not agree more. He's just, yeah, I mean, you would think after the train wreck of a host that they had the first two or three times, and they finally fired him, surely there's some sort of guy with any kind of hosting. I don't care if it's a game show, if it's a daytime talk show, whatever. You can get somebody who knows how to run a show and move it along. But maybe that goes back to your ego point with him earlier.
Well, I like Kurt Sutter. Obviously, The Shield is a great series. This was very good for most of its run. I do think he got overindulgent the last two seasons or so, but it's still a very good show. I mean, you can't argue that it affected a lot of people. We were talking about it tons of weeks, inside and out. And
there's so many just scenes that you can just mention that says, you know, you remember, you know, when this happened, and people know exactly what you're talking about if they're familiar with the show. I mean, you don't have to get, you know, too deep into that. And the good episodes are fantastic episodes. Mm-hmm. And the emotional episodes are so deeply emotional. And they really make up for maybe some of the more, I guess, duller episodes.
Yeah, I would actually put season two of is it the one where Gemma gets raped? Is season two? I would put that in one of the best seasons of television. Mm-hmm. Overall, I just thought that was a fantastic year of television. Just well done. It's just like any show that gets old. I mean, the last couple of years kind of drug out a little bit. So do you guys think it was the right time to end it? You're happy? You're content?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, same here.
I just wish the last porn they'd been shooting hadn't been just people sitting on faces.
I don't know. That was one fat ass.
Well, hey, that's the title of the series, man. Fat asses.
It was pretty juicy.
It was. Would you guys like to see any more? They've talked about doing like a prequel series. Would you want to do that?
Wouldn't mind if they did a version with Chibs and Tig, but, you know, maybe put it under a different showrunner, somebody who will actually have people above him pulling him in or her from time to time.
Did you agree with that he's being overindulgent?
That is the worst thing to happen to any artist of any type. As soon as you remove your responsibility to others and that kind of thing, you do. It's Stephen King's done it. George Lucas did it. I think Peter Jackson does it to an extent. Success, sadly, can breed some bad things when it comes to artists. And yeah, he was very indulgent this season.
Well, it's, I agree with you. I would actually like to see Chibs and Tig, because I love Tig, man. I just love Tig. Chibs, I don't understand 90% of what he says, but he looks cool, so I'm good with it.
I know. I mean, everybody mumbles through the show anyway, and then when you mumble in a foreign accent, it just really makes it hard to understand.
I'd like to see Tig and Venus, man. I think that would
be
a cool
spin-off.
Wouldn't
they make a nice little rom-com?
It would be great. Oh, great.
With her huge fake tits.
Oh, God. Which look fantastic.
They look so real.
I just want to squeeze them. Okay,
never
guys.
Thought I'd utter the phrase, I want to motorboat his tits. But.
they do look beautiful. All right, I'm
that
ready.
Should be a hashtag, motorboat his tits.
Let's wrap this up, guys. Anything final you want to say about Sons of Anarchy before we go?
Well, you know, really, I mean, but while maybe this last season was not its strongest, and we've done our fair share of nitpicking through the series, the whole series as a whole, I think is very good. It's been one of my favorite shows. It has run its course. I mean, 7 years is a healthy life for a series. Mm-hmm. So, there's nothing can really be, you can't really complain about it very much at all. And it's been a quality product the vast majority of the time. I'm happy for it. I'm happy to see it go. And, of course, wish everybody all the best from that series. I mean, cause they've grown some, admiration and love for me, and I want to see the actors themselves move on to something more, because I've grown attached to them and want to see more of them. So.
You know what I want to see?
Hmm.
Charlie Hunnam, get your ass back into Gypsy Danger and let's do this.
You're just happy he's free, that he can do it whenever he wants now.
Yep. Let's go.
Yep. Same here. It's been a great 7 years, but it was the time to end it, and I'm glad. Unfortunately, a lot of our series that we love are ending, and that's sad, but
yep,
it happens. All right, guys. Remember, I don't know. What do you say? Say hello to Mr. Mayhem.
You buy microwave popcorn?
Buy a motorcycle.
All right. Take care, guys. Right into this world. All alone, God takes your soul, you're on your own. The crow flies straight, a perfect line, on the devil's bed until you die.